Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
The Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, James Lawless, is gathering together a round table of the big players in the construction industry and the big players in the delivery of infrastructure to effectively ask them, what is it that you need in terms of skills and qualifications of the emerging labour force? Minister, I would have thought their prime aim at the moment is live human bodies who can go to work rather than fancy skills.
So, look, I think we need both. So good morning and great to be on talking about this important meeting this morning. So part of my ministry, a big part of it is skills, talent, training, and making sure that we have the people, the human capital, as you say, the bodies to go to work, and that they have the skills, the training, the know-how to do the jobs efficiently and productively, and at the scale that we need. And the government has significant ambitions set out. We want to build 300,000 houses over the lifetime of the government. We also want to build our infrastructure, our energy grid, our railways, our roads, our ports. And all of these things need engineers, they need tradespeople, they need planners. There's a lot of more complex, sophisticated skills with things like modern methods of construction coming into it. So I'm sitting down this morning with a group of close to 40 experts from around construction, including the big companies, including your Arups, your Siscs, your Glenveys, but also the likes of our Transport Infrastructure Ireland, Irish Water, Air Grid, looking at their infrastructure needs and housing needs. And I'm asking them a couple of questions. What are the skills that they need? What is the supply like at the moment? Do they have the people with the skills to do the job? If not, why not? And on the other side of the table, I'm bringing my training agencies, so like the SULIS, like the ETBs, like the Higher Education Authority, who are responsible for delivering the training and skills into the system. I'm bringing them around the table to speak to each other and say, what are the gaps? Do we need to pivot? Do we need to change focus? Do we need to upscale, downscale in particular areas?
And do you have the capacity to deliver on what those needs are? Because if Irish Water comes and says we need high-end hydraulic engineers, or if Ballymore comes and says we need 900 electricians or plumbers or whatever it might be, is the system able to pivot to deliver that output?
Yeah, I think it is. So I think we can be quite versatile. Also, in terms of investment, we have record investment. So we now have 415 million per annum in apprentices. We have over 4.5 billion actually across my portfolio, across education and training. So the resources are being put in and we'll continue to grow those year on year.
But you're not constrained by the simple physics of you need classrooms in which to teach people, you need tutors, you need lecturers, you need professors. They take time to get.
So what we need to do is we need to understand what skills to focus on. So one of the findings, this is the second of these events. I'm holding construction today. I'm holding an event on AI next month, professional services the month after, moving to life sciences, pharma, advanced manufacturing, semiconductors, sector by sector each month, looking at a deep dive into industry needs. But at the first meeting we had, which was a roundtable across all sectors, the key issue that came up was what they call transversal skills. So not necessarily the specialties, but a case of communication skills, teamwork, being able to present your work, being able to solve problems with others. They were sort of general skills, which in some cases aren't being taught now in courses because people are going in to do a very deep dive into sort of specialist areas and not necessarily coming out with those transferable skills. So that's one finding, which
is that though not a challenge for your colleague in secondary education rather than for tertiary education?
I think it's across both. I think it is. I mean, I think there is a Leaving Cert reform underway at the moment, but I think also when students come into third level, they are forced to make choices very early on about what they want to be for the rest of their lives. That's not really appropriate or realistic anymore. I think it's better for them to have a broader exposure to different subjects.
But is it realistic to take somebody who is now an adult? I mean, they are 18 years of age. They come into third level and you find them and you say, look, you are incapable or significantly at a deficit when it comes to teamwork, when it comes to communications, when it comes to presentations. We will fix that in a relatively short space of time. Surely to some extent that ship has sailed.
So actually, it's not really a short space of time because I believe in lifelong learning. And I think that it's never too late or too early to start retraining. And a big part of what I'm advocating for here is that we have that ongoing training. So we've got short skills as well, things like Springboard, things like SkillNet, where you can take short 3 month, 6 month, 6 week courses in some cases, what we call micro credentials. But we look across the system and we did a survey before today's event, just sort of informally of the attendees to say, what are your main gaps at the moment? So right across the wet trades, we talk about things like plastering, block laying, tiling, but also into things like modelling designs for houses, digital engineering, planning. So right across a number of different specialties, we're seeing gaps. So how do we fix this? I think three ways, actually. One is the system ramps up the training needs and it pivots to focus on the skills that industry are demanding. Secondly, we adopt technology. So modern methods of construction, you can now build components off-site. You can put together your timber frame houses, you can put together your concrete bases using sort of robotics to do 3D printing, etc. And you can bring those to site on the back of a lorry and put them together. Or you can actually go further than that. And Framespace told me about what they do is called 3D printing. Effectively, you build the entire house or entire unit off-site and drop it in place, ready to go when you get to the final destination. So that's another advance again.
Now, not to harp on it, but if you take those examples as a case in point, let us imagine that at this roundtable you discover we need more people with the skills to be able to run the machines that do 3D printing of housing. It is going to take you months, year or two, to get in the people who can train those courses. It's going to take years for them to go through those courses. So the lag time, it's another worrying indication of the challenge that we have in getting anywhere near our housing targets, isn't it?
So look, there's no doubt that it's a huge challenge, but I suppose the important message I have today is that government are alive to this, very much being proactive on it. One of the first things I did when I came into this brief was I looked for reports as to where the skills needs were. I wanted to validate those reports against the real experience of industry. I have anecdotal conversations all the time. I want to do it in a formal way. I'm bringing people around the table today, and I will continue to do this month by month, sector by sector. And when we come out of today's session and we say, OK, if we need more engineers or we need more wet trades, and we need more skills in this area, that area, we can then very quickly pivot. We can go back to Sulis, back to the ETBs, back to the training agencies. I don't think we're going to start ripping up curricula and starting from scratch, but we might be able to say, well, we need to up the places in one particular course, and maybe we might drop them another course by, you know, to balance out. Or we might say we need more focus on modern methods of construction in that particular skill set. Or we might pivot to some other area. Or we might look at...
Okay. Can I just ask on that, James Lawless, whatever about the apprentices and trades end of the spectrum, what about the other end of the spectrum? Because you talk about med tech, you talk about the life sciences, you talk about innovation. EI is now putting an awful lot of its investment into trying to create domestic unicorns and create significant IPOs in Ireland. Yeah, at the same time, our university sector is sliding down the rankings further and further and further. We are no longer in a lot of the rankings in top 50 or even top 100 when we once were. Does that worry you?
It does, but I wouldn't want to overstate that either. I suppose in terms of the unicorns and where we want to go, research and innovation is a big part of my portfolio as well. And Research Ireland have recently been reformulated. Dermot O'Brien is the new CEO, really excellent guy, Irish academic, spent time in Cambridge as a part of the innovation startup.
But shouldn't we aspire to have a university that is at least, if not the equivalent of, but comparable to a Cambridge, to a Sorbonne, to an MIT, to a Yale, to a Harvard?
100%. And that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm building out research. I've invested in what I call the Inspire 750 million research envelope, which the first call opened just last month. And that's looking to build the infrastructure. It's building the equipment and the capacity in the system that we can have innovators and research excellence right around the country. And every university, actually, we have the technological universities coming into the space now as well. And the other thing that I'm doing is I'm combining that with industry. So research is being funded for research excellence in its own right, but also impact. And is it having an enterprise impact? Is the research of today? We know we live in a changing world. We've got deglobalization. We've got tariffs. We've got all kinds of trade issues and uncertainty in the world. The best bet on our long-term future is investing in research and innovation and building domestic capacity to have that intellectual property to create new ideas, new economic growth. So I'm doing that at scale. And a big part of that is leaning into industry. So, for example, things like industry PhDs, I've included in the new research on strategy, where a student's taken on board a 3 or 4 PhD project. They will actually, in some cases, turn to industry and say, what is a real-world problem you need to solve? And then they're doing it in partnership with the company. They'll almost certainly go to work for that company when they qualify. But in the meantime, we've solved a problem that needed to be solved. So taking it away from a very abstract academia, there's a place for that for sure, but actually marrying it up with the needs of the economy, needs of society.
I want to move to a couple of matters beyond your specific brief. One of them is the decision by your party last night to examine or to pursue the removal of the preclusion of the use of nuclear power in Ireland. Fianna Fáil's going nuclear.
So look, this is something I've actually argued for myself for some time. I spoke in favour of it last night. I welcome this development. Actually, I first spoke about this on your station a couple of months ago. And I think that really we need to have, again, going back to energy independence, energy security, we are dependent on fossil fuels imported from far-flung parts of the globe, including conflict zones, the Middle East and so forth. And we see where that gets us in terms of price shocks. So we need to examine, in the long term, an energy mix which is predicated on renewables. We get all that good offshore wind and solar energy tapped as much as we can.
But do you think nuclear will be in there?
There's times the wind won't blow and the sun won't shine. And we know that to be the case. And at the moment, we have fossil fuel providing the mainstay in between. If we can swap out the fossil fuel for nuclear as an alternative baseline.
So that would be your desire? You would like to see something
that is my personal preference, yes. I think that makes a lot of sense. At the moment, though, we can't even research it. We can't even do an exploratory examination because it's prohibited under law. So the proposal last night by my colleague, Deputy James O'Connor, is to remove that prohibition from law. At the very least, then we can commission studies and say, well, is this going to work for Ireland? Give an example. In 2022, the Department of Energy, under the then Minister, Minister Ryan, commissioned a full study on energy security. They didn't even consider nuclear. There was a footnote at the end of the report, all 120 pages, saying we did not look at nuclear because it's prohibited under legislation. In reality, any analysis by any energy company around the world or agency says nuclear is part of a long-term sustainable energy mix. It's much safer, far safer than it used to be. In fact, it's not considered to be an unsafe issue at all around the world now with technology. It's also cleaner. It's now considered a clean resource. And we can do them on a small scale. The plants now are the size of a Dublin bus. They're not the size of a massive reactor like we've seen in the past. Technology has moved on massively and we need to move with the times.
One final thing I wanted to ask you about, which is a story in the Daily Mail, which is reporting that, and I quote, James Lawless has begun taking backbench TDs to his office for meetings and coffee in a bid to begin building support for a bid at the leadership when Micheál Martin steps down. Now, part of the reason why this is this analysis is there is because you have previously said publicly that you desire the Fianna Fáil leadership if and when it becomes available. Normally, the sort of MO in people with leadership ambition is that they remain coy until a gap opens. Why have you opted against being coy?
Look, I've always been a straight talker. I always answer a straight question with a straight answer. It's been my operational way of operating since I entered politics. Generally, people like it. I've been returned on four successive elections. I say, people ask me a question, I give a straight answer. But look, I think I should stress.
So are you meeting backbenchers?
No, I mean, when people like you ask me questions
on
the radio.
A question. You know, are you meeting backbenchers to build support?
Of course I am. I meet all my colleagues up and down the country. And backbenchers, one of the cries from last year or two has been that ministers are aloof and not available. So I'm saying I am available. I'm available to all colleagues that want to speak to me. It's actually part of my job as a minister serving the government, serving my party, that I should be available and accountable to my colleagues. And I will continue to do that. But the other thing that stresses, there's absolutely no vacancy. And Micheál Martin is Taoiseach of the country, leader of Fianna Fáil. He's leading us through very difficult times. We're only 18 months into a new government. It's a five-year term. We have a huge job of work to get on with. I've just been talking about the skills challenges, you know, in terms of the housing mission that we have, the energy mission that we have, the infrastructure, dealing with the very complex societal mix at the moment, and very challenging global conditions. So, look, Micheál is very experienced. He's a very solid, strong Taoiseach at a time when we need stability. He has my absolute full support. And look, we all have ambitions long term, but that's for another day. That's not for today. But I will remain open and accountable to all my colleagues and very glad to be able to do so.
Minister, thank you very much for your time this morning. That is Minister James Lawless, the Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science. 53106 if you want to get in touch, or 087 1400 106.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage. In association with AIR. Weekday mornings at 7. News Talk. Conversation that counts.